High Rising, written by Angela Thurkell and read by Jilly Bond.
Chapter 1. The Prize Giving. The headmaster's wife twisted herself round in her chair to talk to Mrs. Morland, who was sitting in the row just behind her.
"I can't make out," she said reflectively, "why all the big boys seem to be at the bottom of preparatory schools and the small ones at the top. All those lower boys who got prizes were quite large, average children, but when we get to the upper forms they all look about 7, and undersized at that. Look at the head of the remove, for instance. He's just coming up the platform steps now."
Mrs. Morland looked. In front of her was the platform, where the headmaster stood behind a rapidly diminishing pile of prizes. On each side were the assistant masters, wearing such gowns as they could muster. A shrimp-like little boy in spectacles was coming up to get his prizes.
"That's him. Wesendonck," said the headmaster's wife. "And what a name to send a boy to school with. Such a nice child, too. I hope he will be able to carry all his prizes. I'm always telling Bill to have them done up safely. Poor Bill is nearly speechless with a bad cold and all the talking today. I hope he'll get through."
At this moment, the headmaster found Master Wesendonck's tall pile of books slipping from his grasp. He juggled frantically with them for a moment, and then, to the infinite joy of some 200 boarders and day boys, they crashed to the ground in all directions. A bevy of form masters rushed forward to the rescue. Master Wesendonck, realizing with immense presence of mind that his natural enemies were for once in their proper place, grovelling on the floor, stood still and did nothing, ignoring the shrieks of joy and abuse which his young friends poured upon him from the galleries of the school hall. Seldom had the time and the place and the very unfortunate name come together at such a propitious moment. Few of the jokes were funny, and none of them original, but they gave great satisfaction, and pandemonium reigned. "Isn't Bill going to bark at them?" asked Mrs. Morland anxiously, for the headmaster stood blandly surveying the tumult, making no effort to quell it.
"In about a minute," said the headmaster's wife, "I can see him sucking a throat lozenge. When he has swallowed it, he'll give tongue. And I can't think," she added, surveying with some disfavour the scrum of masters on the floor, "why on earth headmasters' wives in novels fall in love with assistant masters, or assistant masters with them, for that matter. Just look at ours."
"Just look at the maze in the house. Do you ever see such maze?" murmured Mrs. Morland. Certainly, from Monsieur Dubois, the French master, who had been so long at the school that the boys despised him now more from tradition than conviction, to Mr. Ferris, the latest addition to the staff, whom the headmaster's wife was perpetually mistaking for an upper boy who'd grown a good deal in the holidays, there was no face among that collection of excellent, highly educated, or athletic, hard-working, conscientious men which could, one would think, cause a flutter in any female breast. "And yet they are mostly married," continued the headmaster's wife. "And the ones that aren't married are engaged. I suppose it's a law of nature, only I wish nature would exercise natural selection, which is one of the things she is famous for, because the masters left to themselves don't. What I have to bear from having masters' wives to tea..." But at this moment the headmaster swallowed the lozenge, and in the voice of a sergeant-major who had been educated among sea lions, simply remarked, "Be quiet!" There was instantaneous silence.
"Bill barked beautifully, didn't he?" said his proud wife to Mrs. Morland. "Listen, Laura, wait till the other horrible parents have gone and have some tea with me. Bring Tony, too, if you like."
"All right, Amy, but I can't stay long. I'm driving down to the cottage."
The rest of the prizes were distributed without mishap, and boys and parents began to surge out of the hall. Laura waited by the entrance to claim her own child, whom she could barely recognise in his revolting Eton collar. When Tony was first sent to school, Laura had rung up the headmaster's wife, an old friend, to ask if the regulation Eton suit, which nothing, she said, would ever induce her to let Tony appear in at home, was really necessary for Sundays. Amy had asked what kind of shape Tony was, and hearing that he was a strong...